Good morning, everyone. Welcome to Peyto's first quarter 2015 results conference call. This is obviously a very busy week of reporting, so thanks to everybody for calling in and joining us this morning. Before we get started, I wanted to send out a great big thank you to the Peyto team here for another fantastic quarter of results. They continue to challenge the status quo and continue to drive costs down. And of course, that makes Peyto and its shareholders even more profitable and arguably even more resilient to the changing commodity prices and possibly changing fiscal regimes that we might have out in front of us. So a great big thank you to them. In the room with me today, we've got the whole Peyto management team consisting of Scott Robinson, our Chief Operating Officer, Kathy Turgeon, our CFO, Dave Thomas, our VP Exploration, JP Lachance, our VP Exploitation, Tim Louie, our VP of Land, Lee Curran, our VP of Drilling and Completions, and Todd Burdick, our VP of Production. Of course, we also have Jim Grant, our Investor Awareness Representative here. And Jim, I see you've collected a whole bunch of questions, so why don't we turn it over to you?
Okay. So for those of you who are new to our conference calls, we hold the first half as a question and answer session where I ask some of the senior management questions about Peyto and its latest financials before we turn the call over to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses. Darren, while commodity prices have been challenging, particularly with liquids, and despite the limitations imposed on us on the amount of gas we can put in the pipeline system, we were as active as we were in the first quarter of 2014, drilling 31 wells in the first quarter of 2015. Are those activity levels justified given the current commodity price, and are they justified if we aren't sure we can put the production into the pipe?
Yeah, Jim, we had obviously some pretty low propane prices in particular in the quarter. Those weren't very nice, and obviously we had some issues with TransCanada Pipeline, or they had some issues arguably with their pipeline and their ability to take gas from us. But you know, both of those issues are very, I think, short-term issues. And you know, we're not investing capital for the short term. We've got to remember we're investing capital for the long-term value creation here, and both the commodity prices and the takeaway issues, I think, are going to sort themselves out here quite shortly. So what we really have to remain focused on is the fact that today we're taking advantage of much reduced capital costs. I mean, that's the real opportunity here. The fact that we've got 20% off in terms of service costs, we're able to drill wells, complete them, bring on new production for 20% less today. You know, a few months of delaying production, a few months of lower propane prices don't have nearly the same effect on the total return as the reduced capital costs do at the front end. So, I mean, that's the real goal, and so that's why we're still full steam ahead here.
Okay. Turning to Todd Burdick, our VP of Production. Todd, we noted in our Q1 release that volume constraints on the TCPL system hampered our production. Can you summarize the nature of the constraints and what we expect for the balance of the year?
Yeah, sure, Jim. So since December of 2014, there's been an ongoing curtailment related to pipeline integrity issues and a temporary pressure derate in some areas. So that has restricted shippers to their firm service plus 30% of their December nominated interruptible service. Additionally, in Q1, there were three separate, more extensive curtailments because of compressor maintenance. That cut shippers back to firm service only for 20 days. Coming out of those maintenance curtailments, the ongoing integrity-related curtailment was then dropped to firm service plus 20% of interruptible. In the near term, and I'm talking specifically about Q2, we will see more curtailments restricting us to firm service only and restricting us to about 80,000 BOE. If the schedule holds, that could be as much as 24 of the 91 days in the quarter. But looking beyond June, there's a few maintenance curtailments scheduled through the rest of the year, and TCPL have indicated that the integrity curtailment should end around September 30th. We're hopeful that with declining production and storage injection, the degree of curtailment after May will be minor to inconsequential. And I should add that we expect our firm service to increase by 10,000 BOE a day for June, and we also have a tranche of firm service in November that will add 3,800 BOE a day.
Okay. So Todd, with the transportation constraint, what has been the producing strategy to cope with the limitation in light of ongoing drilling of new wells?
Well, Jim, there's been a few options we have depending on the particular area, plant, and well rate that we're dealing with. in the greater Sundance area, we have the flexibility to move service from one station to another. So as production declines in one station to below the prescribed curtailment volume, we move service to another station where we have wells coming on production. We also physically have the ability to swing gas from one plant to another to make room for gas coming from new wells. And then finally, our general well producing strategy has been to produce the new wells while restricting or shutting in older wells in order to meet the levels of allowed transportation. The older wells typically have higher operating costs per unit of production. So in the context of an already difficult situation, we use this as an opportunity to save some money.
Okay. Turning to J.P. Lachance, our VP of Exploitation. J.P., can you comment on how the new wells brought on in 2015 so far, the 21,000 barrel of oil equivalent a day of additions we identify in our first quarter news release, compared to like wells of past programs?
Well, thanks, Jim. As Todd mentioned, we're bringing on all our new wells, so we're getting a good look at their capability, and so far, quite pleased with the results. When we build our capital budget, the production forecast is based on a combination of type curves from prior years, and so far in 2015, we're greater than 4,000 BOEs a day ahead of our estimated growth forecast. When I look at the average performance of our 2015 wells against our 2014 and 2013 programs, our average 2015 well is about 200 BOEs a day ahead of the average well from those past programs at the 30-day mark. Now, not every well is ahead of expectations, but our overachievers are coming from all across our land base throughout the Spirit River strata. You know, the Brazeau Wilrich, Ansel Flares, Pedley Notikewin, and Greater Sundance in both the Wilrich and the Notikewin have all contributed to our early success. The better results can be attributed to follow-ups on some more successful discoveries last year and some targeted extensions to our proven areas. So far, we're off to a good start, Jim.
Okay. My next question is for Lee Curran, our Vice President of Drilling and Completions. Lee, the first quarter results news release speaks to a drop in cost to drill and complete wells, as well as an increase in the average horizontal lengths of the wells drilled. Can you provide some specifics on the most recent wells with some idea on how service cost reductions have progressed from the beginning of the quarter to date? Additionally, can you comment on whether or not some of the savings are the results of changes in our methods?
You bet, Jim. So present depressed activity levels through our industry has made for some active competition in the service sector. And although those pricing reductions that come with this level of competition is only one component of our cost structure decline, it's certainly been the most significant factor. As illustrated in our first quarter release, average costs indicate reductions of 8% and 15% respectively on drilling and completion operations on a per well basis. This includes two operations that experienced significant difficulties early in the quarter, one of those in Brazeau and one in Pedley. The elements comprising the total cost reductions consist not only of service cost reductions, but also of performance improvements and technical program revisions.
The average drill days have continued to decline through the first quarter by approximately half a day per well on average.
However, when looking at our core Sundance area, these performance gains have been much greater, with average drill times in the first quarter now averaging approximately 18 and a half days, which is down nearly two full days as compared to 2014, and down one full day as compared to our previous quarter. Technical revisions have a mixed effect on our total well cost, and although many of those elements result in a cost reduction, others do result in a slight cost increase. As reported, our average drill depths continues to increase. Of course, that additional meterage drilled and completed adds some incremental cost. However, the gains achieved through increased performance have offset these costs by a significant margin. Additional technical costs are being methodically implemented with resultant further cost reductions. These include an increase to the percentage of multi-well pad locations being executed in the first quarter as compared to 2014. In addition to this, we continue to optimize our fracture treatment programs, most notably in regards to proppant selection. Of the most significance has been the reduction in service costs that we've realized over the quarter, and the progression of these reductions since January has been quite dynamic. through January and into February, there was a certain level of hesitation from various service contractors to make significant pricing reductions immediately. As the activity decline continued in the industry, pricing competition increased with full realization of our current pricing structure by about mid-March. As such, the quarter average well costs reported in our Q1 release do not adequately represent the cost structure we are actually seeing today. When looking at a more recent interval, say over the past month and a half, these reductions are significantly deeper than those previously mentioned. Excluding those currently in progress, the most 15 wells drilled spans this period of time from the middle of March as an accurate representation of our current cost structure. All of these wells are of the Spirit River category and have averaged drilling case costs of approximately $2.15 million, with the most recent five of these averaging below $2 million. This compares to a 2014 average drill cost of $2.66 million and a first quarter 2015 average cost of $2.45. Similarly, the most recent set of well completions have averaged approximately $1.25 million as compared to 2014 of $1.7 million and a first quarter average of $1.45 million.
Okay, turning to our Chief Operations Officer, Scott Robinson. Our cash costs, including royalties, are down substantially on a per MCFE basis year over year. How much of that is attributable to economy of scale and how much to the low commodity price? And are there other independent factors at play?
Jim. All of the outflows of money related to the production of a unit of product are really, the cash costs are really comprised of five components. Our field operating costs, gas transportation, royalty, interest, and G&A, just to clarify what that cash cost is made up of. And this last quarter, really low at 89 cents, the combination of those five components adding to 89 cents. That compares to last year's range of 97 cents to $1.24 per MCF. So a really good result. On our sales price of $4.17, 89 cents leaves us with a 79% margin. So, you know, Darren has emphasized the fact that that our margins are high, and that's largely from this cost structure that we're achieving. If we compare quarter over quarter, that 89 cent cash cost to first quarter of last year compares to $1.24 last year. And the big differences in this reduction relate to the tightening of our field operating costs, which is a pretty important part of that, and the reduction in the royalty that we paid this last quarter. We've talked a lot about field operating costs as being a cornerstone of our operations, and I won't get into too many details on that, but we saw the field op costs drop quarter one last year to quarter one this year from 39 cents down to 32 cents, and this was largely the result of reduction in methanol usage, the volume of methanol. There was a concerted effort to focus on consumption of methanol, and we were dealing with a little bit warmer winter this past year, so we benefited from that. A second component of our operating cost reduction was a decrease in Alberta power prices, pool prices. They fell in about a half, and that carved a penny to two off of our op costs. So those are the reasons for the reduction in operating costs. Royalties fell from 46 cents quarter one last year to 18 cents per MCF equivalent this year. Part of that was due to a slight drop in the volume of royalties that we're paying as a fraction of our production, but largely that was driven from the pricing effect, the value of those royalties that we're paying on a per MCF basis. You know, our price realizations dropped from 614 per MCF down to 343, and parallel to that, the value of the royalty dropped as well. So that's the details of it. You know, we're going to do our best to continue to improve that 89 cents downwards. We want to stay at the top of the industry competition and see if we can dig further into that, just similar to what Lee mentioned. He's been able to dig into the capital side of the business.
Turning to our VP of Land, Tim Louie. Have we seen a drop in the cost of land sales given the lower commodity prices? And how about the acquisitions we made outside of land sales? Are they reflecting a discount due to tough times in the patch?
Thanks, Jim. We definitely have seen a decrease in the average price paid at this year's land sales. Over the first 4 months of 2015, the total bonus paid for Alberta Crown Petroleum Natural Gas Rights is down 60%. The average bid price this year is $67 per acre. Last year's average bid price over the same period was $164 per acre. This lower price environment has provided Peyto with the opportunity to acquire lands at reasonable prices. In the first quarter of 2015, Peyto acquired 14 sections for an average price of $92 per acre. With regards to other acquisitions outside of land sales, the current price environment has been conducive to getting more deals within our core areas. Companies that are not as active as Peyto seem to be more willing to deal on their acreage. And this is especially true when those companies have expiring lands. This year, Peyto has already been able to transact on more swaps, purchases, and farm-ins than we did last year. We are working on more deals, some of which will be finalized within the next month. So while the lower commodity prices are hindering the patch as a whole, for Peyto and its inherent low-cost structure, it has provided us with an opportunity to acquire lands, both at land sales and through tuck-in acquisitions, at very favorable metrics.
Okay. Turning to our CFO, Kathy Turgeon.
As the cash cost of
debt drops on a per MCFE basis, it seems to be dropping faster than the increase in production volumes and the increase of net debt warrants. How much improvement are we seeing in the actual cost of our capital?
Thanks, Jim. The cash costs of debt have dropped from 23 cents per MCFE in Q1 of 2014 to 20 cents per MCFE in Q1 of 2015. Our average interest rate was reduced from 4.3% in Q1 2014 to 3.6% in Q1 2015. The underlying interest rate has not changed significantly, but in April of 2014, Peyto negotiated a new credit facility that had decreased stamping and standby fees charged on our credit line. In addition, Peyto has moved to a lower debt-to-EBITDA range in the credit facility pricing grid, which gives us an increased cost to our debt. The combination of these two factors is behind the reduction in our debt costs. And given the current environment in the debt markets, the assumption that it continues, I think we'll see these low costs continue.
Okay, thank you. JP, with the lower costs per well and greater well lengths, but taking into account the lower commodity prices, how have the economics for the various well types in our palette of drilling opportunities been impacted?
Well, Jim, the bulk of our drilling program right now is in the Spirit River formations. In our greater Sundance area, there are regions of higher productivity or higher liquid yields, but for the most part, the outcomes are quite similar, so I'll speak more to a generic Spirit River type well. That well, with the 2014 cost structure and today's strip prices, still makes us a positive return, but with continued cost reductions that Lee spoke to earlier, and particularly our encouraging well performance so far, our full cycle returns on the strip yield us values similar to last year's program when prices were much higher. And the end result here is that we expect to yield consistently good returns this year with this program, despite the current prices.
Okay, turning to Dave Thomas, our VP of Exploration, we note that we purchased some several hundred square kilometers of 3D seismic data in the first quarter. Can you explain how this impacts our inventory of drilling plans for the remainder of 2015?
Jim, the new 3D seismic was acquired to support drilling linked to two new facility expansions and to also help select the best places to test a couple of new land blocks. After breakup in the Ansel Edson area, we plan to have two or three of our 10 drilling rigs drilling Wilrich and Middle Falher horizontals to supply our Swanson gas plant, where we've looped a pipeline and are also adding 40 million MCF per day of new plant capacity. This will bring the total capacity at Swanson up to 105 million cubic feet per day.
Down in Brazeau, there will be two rigs drilling to follow up on some strong Wilrich results there this winter. 10 million cubic feet of new capacity will be added in Q3 at the Brazeau plant to bring its total capacity up to 50 million cubic feet per day.
Plus, we're looking at a further expansion in Q4 or in early 2016. The two new areas we want to test are in Minehead, south of Ansel, and an area we call West Wildhay. At Minehead, we plan to test the Wilrich in Q3. At West Wildhay, we'd like to test the Notikewin in Q4. Our other five rigs will be deployed in the greater Sundance area, where our 3D coverage is already quite excellent. Now, these rigs will be drilling a mix of Wilrich, Notikewin, Blue Sky, plus upper and middle flare targets.
Okay, thank you. Lee, how are our operations progressing in breakup so
far this year? Is the breakup season different from last year's? Is our activity in breakup different from last year?
Well, Jim, for the last couple of years, we sometimes ask ourselves what breakup is here. As discussed
in our year-end conference call, we were in the midst of negotiations with industry road owners in the greater Sundance area, with the goal in mind to maintain an active spring breakup capital program should we see favorable conditions. As we experienced in 2014, operating conditions to date this spring have been remarkable. Although access restrictions were initiated by the various road owners through late March and into early April, these favorable conditions and our successful negotiations have resulted in our ability to maintain continuous operations on 6 drilling rigs and 2 to 3 completion spreads. The remaining Peyto contracted rigs and associated completion gear to support those rigs are situated outside of the greater Sundance area, where breakup access agreements were not accomplished. We await lifting of road ban restrictions, which we anticipate to occur late in May or early June. And as illustrated by the prior discussion on our cost structure, we have again proven true the concept of continuity of people and equipment results in extremely high level of sustained performance and capital efficiency. Our gross well count exiting breakup this year is expected to be very similar to the gross well counts we reported exiting breakup last year. And this breakup program has allowed us to load level our organization. And as stated in the past, we get to accomplish more with less.
Okay. Darren, when we spoke about our capital budget for 2015 in the last conference call, you presented a plan to keep the activity level as planned in the fall, but expected to reduce costs, bringing the capital budget down. Are we on track for this? Has the commodity price gyration since mid-March made for any changes to our plans?
Yeah, Jim, I mean, as Lee's talking about, we're, I think, exactly on track. In fact, maybe a little bit ahead, really. I think last year we drilled right through breakup, but I don't think we were able to do as much completion work as we are
accomplishing this year. So if anything, I think we're a little bit ahead. So
yeah, you know, right from the start, we had a big aggressive plan in mind for this year. We wanted to take advantage of what we thought were going to be dropping service costs. You know, we had a record number of wells that we wanted to drill, and we're still on that exact same track. You know, we're realizing and have realized the cost savings that we needed to realize for the economics to still work, as JP talked about. We've got those in hand. We're continuing to improve upon those, as Lee was talking about. You know, I think it bodes very well for us having a very aggressive year and maybe even considering more activity than we have originally planned here, depending on how the year pans out and, of course, depending on what kind of royalty regime we are going to be experiencing perhaps next year. But, you know, the current environment is very good. And, yeah, we've got some commodity price gyrations, but that really is what's driving the opportunity for us. You know, the low oil prices, the questionable gas prices in people's mind is what's shutting down a lot of activity in the province, and that's, you know, where we come alive. We're able to make still very good returns on the capital we're investing. We have very good achievements in both sides of the cost structure. So, yeah, we're excited about this year. You know, I think the plan is as always, it's fluid. It reacts to changing commodities and, you know, the changes that we see going forward. But the foundation, you know, of our strategy is as solid as ever.
Okay, thank you. Wayne, I'd like to turn the call over at this point in time to questions from investors and representatives of investment businesses.
Thank you. We will now take questions from the telephone lines. Our first question is from Faye Lee from Odlum Brown. Please go ahead.
Hi, it's Fai here. I just want to understand this. In terms of acquiring land from other producers that may not be able to make it work at this, given the low prices, I think the suggestion that the economics work for you because of your lower cost structure. Can you maybe comment on the factors behind that? Is it because some of this land's close to some of your existing infrastructure, or close to some of your rigs, or a better service contract. So I'm just trying to understand what your advantage there is in terms of why you're able to make some of this property work versus someone else. Thanks.
Yeah, it's all those things, really. I mean, you know, we've got a very significant stronghold in terms of infrastructure out in our core deep basin areas. You know, all of our gas plants and pipeline infrastructure create fairly significant barriers to other parties to come in and develop resources, whether they, you know, acquired those lands recently or have had them for a long time. And, you know, just the general activity levels in the industry are pretty low, and on gas have been pretty low. So there's a lot of minerals that are still continuing to expire that guys have had for 5 years. They maybe bought them 5 years ago thinking gas prices would be better or commodity prices would be better. And of course, they haven't drilled them to this point. So
a lot of it is expiries. We've highlighted that in past calls and in our presentation, all the expiring lands that are coming down the pipe.
And a lot of it too, I think, has to do with limited capital programs. Companies have to allocate capital to perhaps their coreest of core areas, and you know, these lands may not be that for them, so that creates an opportunity for us. And ultimately, at the end of the day, as you mentioned, you know, we do have an extremely low cost structure,
so we can in certain opportunities carry a little bit of a burden. We can farm in and offer a gross overriding royalty to that mineral owner
in order to develop those resources, and still that well is profitable because we have an advantaged cost structure. So, you know, I think all of those reasons really contribute to why we tend to be the company of choice for guys to look to either farm out their land or deal those lands away. And then, as we mentioned in the press release too, you know, we've got a fairly sizable war chest now of available capital that we can use to make purchases. And you know, we've seen this quarter especially debt levels for a lot of producers climbing quite aggressively. You know, a lot of guys are going to have to do something about those debt levels. So that means selling off non-core lands and properties. And, you know, we're definitely in a buyer's market. There's no question. So I'm glad to see that there's capitulation by the sellers and that we can get some deals done. That's good.
Great. Thank you.
You bet.
Thank you. The following question is from Kevin Kaser from Hedge Eye Risk Management. Please go ahead.
Hey, good morning, guys. You guys alluded to the new fiscal regime a couple times in your prepared remarks, but just wanted to get some more color there. I know it's obviously very early days, but you know, what impact might this have on your business? And I guess, you know, what potential changes are you most afraid of?
Well, Kevin, as you know, we're 100% Alberta. That's been our strategy right from day one. We believe in the resources in Alberta, and we believe the governments in Alberta want those resources developed. And you know, we all remember the Our Fair Share disaster that happened, I guess, in 2007, where the government came out with a new royalty regime that wasn't particularly well thought out, and it didn't last very long. They had to obviously respond to activity levels in the industry with a whole bunch of incentives and patches in order to, I guess, bring it back into a form that works for both parties. But, you know, nothing's changed today. She's commented that She wants the fiscal regime in Alberta to be competitive. She said that she wants it to be fair, and she also doesn't want to scare away activity. And I think even yesterday, the fact that she came out after the market closed and had a press release and tried to reassure everyone that that was going to be her goal really does tell me that she's going to use the market as a barometer for her policy. Which is great. You know, I think the Stelmach government arguably, I think, wasn't thinking that way and was shocked
to see what the market did. And this government is already looking quite closely at what the market
response to their policy might be. So, you know, at the end of the day, you know, what we do know is that Peyto is so lean, it's so efficient, it's so environmentally friendly, and it's so profitable that arguably, we should be the poster child for any type of company that the Alberta government wants operating in Alberta and developing Alberta's resources. You know, because we're so efficient, there will always be more real return to be shared by the people of Alberta as the royalty owners and for our shareholders than can be generated by really any other operator in the industry. So, you know, for me as a lifelong Albertan, I want to incentivize companies like Peyto. I want them to invest in Alberta. I want them to employ Alberta. And I want them to profitably develop Alberta's resources. That's good for me as an Albertan. And I think, you know, ultimately that's what this new government wants too. So, you know, I don't think we need to be particularly fearful of what they're thinking.
Right, well said. You guys benefit quite a bit from the natural gas deep drilling royalty program. Do you think you quantify the financial benefit from that program that you're realizing today? And if that was, if that drilling credit were changed or eliminated, how might that impact your activity levels?
We do benefit from that program for sure. That helps the economics. But you have to remember too that comparing our economics with and without the program is not the right way to look at it, because again, we're one of the most efficient companies out there, the most profitable companies out there. We need to compare it to the average company in the industry that we want to encourage drilling from, and how does it affect their economics. And I think, you know, what we'd find obviously is at today's commodity prices, that incentive isn't good enough. We need more incentive to get capital invested in the province, to get drilling happening for natural gas in the province at today's commodity prices. Because we have the incentive today and drilling activity is shutting down. So, you know, that's the reality on both the oil and the gas side, is that if we're going to talk about revising the fiscal regimes and looking at the incentive programs for drilling today, we probably need to make them even better, because we need to incent capital to come into this industry so that we can be competitive in North America at these commodity prices. Not make them worse, make them better. If you think back to all the different fiscal regimes Alberta's had and all the different types of incentives that have come and gone over time, you know, I think we've evolved. We have a sophisticated royalty structure right now that works. You know, it does incentivize the right type of drilling. We're getting at the right types of resources, and arguably we are competitive in North America. There's been a lot of analysis that's showed that over the last little while. So, you know, I think it's working. Can it be tweaked? Can we make it even better? Probably. So, you know, I would say this government should be looking at that.
All right, I appreciate the caller. Thanks.
Yeah, you bet.
The following question is from Barbara Patansky from Addenda Capital. Please go ahead.
Thanks very much. I was just hoping you could repeat something. I just missed some of the details. If you could just again say how much firm versus interruptible service you currently have, and you mentioned that you were adding some more firm later this year?
That's right, Barb. And some of this data actually was in my monthly report last month, too. But Todd, you had quoted some numbers.
Yeah, so we have 10,000 barrels a day equivalent of firm coming on in June. We just brought some on in April. And in November, we've got 3,800 barrels a day equivalent coming on. We're running under a current TCPL curtailment of our firm plus 20% of the interruptible that we had available in December of last year when the curtailment came on.
But our firm's running in the 80, just under 80,000 barrel a day range, and it's going to step up progressively over the year here. So with any kind of interruptible added on to that, which is very likely, we should be in reasonable shape to produce that capacity as we move into and beyond summer.
Yeah, as Todd was mentioning, the expectation typically in summer, what happens is there is less flow of gas.
As gas gets injected into storage,
the pipe is arguably less full, and so there is more room for interruptible service capacity. So that plus the firm that we have that we're adding should be more than sufficient to cover off on our production capability. But you know, Barb, this is one of the comments I made in my monthly report, is you have to be a little bit careful with respect to transportation. And I think we've seen this quarter with a lot of companies, that their transportation costs have significantly increased because they're carrying unutilized firm service or firm transportation or takeaway capacity. And, you know, those costs can really start to add up. They can really start to grind away on your profitability. And yeah, you might be able to produce, but if you're producing for no return, what's the point? So we have to be, you know, a little bit careful with respect to matching perfectly the production capability of the company with firm take-or-pay type transportation agreements.
Yeah, I was going to just ask you about that. So with the expected volume growth out of the area, how are you going to balance, I guess, your the strategy, I guess, for meeting your growth volumes and looking at firm versus interruptible while managing the costs? Do you have a specific strategy in terms of how much firm you want?
Well, historically, we've run with about 90% firm at any given time. And that's a very high number historically for the industry as well. And arguably we can do that because we control all of our production, right? We operate all of it. We produce it all through our own facilities. There's no risk that somebody's going to shut us in. And we have a lot of confidence in our production capability. We have very low risk production. The wells are going to water out and surprise us down the road. So all those reasons, we can commit to a greater percentage of firm than most industry participants can. And, you know, we've been adding layers of firm service as we've added production and are confident that that production is good and here to stay and we're going to build upon it. But we have to be, again, a little careful because, you know, we like to be countercyclical to the industry. If, you know, tomorrow gas prices were to go to $6 an MCF and the industry goes crazy drilling gas wells and we decide we don't want to participate in that overheated environment, then, you know, our growth is going to slow, and so as a result, we don't want to be caught with a whole bunch of extra firm capacity. So you're right, it's a delicate balance, but it is easier for us to do, no question, because we operate all of our production, we operate all of our capital projects. We know exactly when and how much we're going to be bringing on and how we're going to be growing. We're not handing the keys, like many operators do, over to other parties to do the drilling, to bring on new production, and so then we're at the mercy of whatever their timeline is, and we don't really know, and how do we pair that with firm service? We don't have any of those risks, so we're in a much better position to properly match exactly what our production volumes are going to be with how much service we need.
That's great. Thanks so much.
You bet. Thanks for the question, Barb. That's good. Okay, well, thanks for listening in. Again, this is a busy week, so appreciate everybody's participation. And we're going to be back to you in August with the second quarter, which is setting up to be another very good one for Peyto in terms of activity levels. And hopefully the results continue to come in and generate the returns that we're looking for. So until then, keep an eye on our website for monthly updates, and we'll be back to you in August. Thanks again. Mm-hmm.